Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for listening. It is a beautiful fall day here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I hope it's nice wherever you're joining us from today. In the studio today, I have with me a physician, Dr. David Perlow, who is quite interesting to me because he is a board-certified urologist and also has quite a bit of good business sense and has made labs available to all of us. And I think a lot of times patients are confused by why we have labs, what's normal, what's not normal. And the topic for today is going to be common and life-saving blood tests. We're going to do a little bit of an education around common and a little bit more comprehensive blood tests. So annual blood screening and testing is a very powerful and cost-effective tool for preventing disease. And they give us kind of a snapshot of our health and often allow us to see health problems or symptoms before we really get into trouble. So making sure we know what our baselines are periodically and checking them and kind of working with our physicians to make sure that we're monitoring what we need to be, I think, is a really important part of our health care. So welcome, Dr. Perlow.
Thank you, Tanya. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, we're happy to have you. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Perlow. He's originally from Chicago and got his medical degree from the Abraham Lincoln School of Medicine in Chicago. That sounds so official, like
that's
presidential,
great.
Doesn't it? And then he went on to, we were just joking, I'm a Buckeye, as most of you know, but he did his internship and residency in surgery and urology at the University of Michigan. So already we're facing off at the mics here.
Right.
We'll have a good time doing it. Yep. And he is affiliated in Atlanta with WellStar Cobb, Kennestone, and Windy Hill Hospitals. And he has a private urology practice, and he is also the owner of Any Lab Test Now, which has 13 locations around Atlanta. So many of our consumers probably have visited some of your sites. So welcome today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so I want to hear right off a little bit about how you became interested in labs from being a board-certified urologist.
Well, it actually started when I was watching an Atlanta Falcon football game one Sunday afternoon, and I was just sitting on my chair half asleep, and all of a sudden it was a commercial break, and an old Falcon quarterback, Steve Bartkowski, was was advertising, and he was pawing a football and telling me to buy a used Ford from some dealership. And in those days, I was sort of full of myself. And I thought, my God, what does he know about selling Fords? And I said, I have expertise. I'm sure I have expertise. And what do I have that people would want? And I thought about it, and I said, well, I have my medical license. And how could I leverage my medical license in a business way? And the first thing that came to mind was I said, well, I could order for people to have CAT scans and x-rays. And I thought about that a little while, and I thought, well, they could just come into a store and say, I want a chest x-ray, or I want a CAT scan. And the problem I had with that is it gave people radiation, and I didn't want to have any
exposure,
risk.
Right.
I didn't want to put people under any risk. So I said, well, what else could I do? And I said, well, people want to have blood tests, and I can order blood tests. So that's exactly when I had the idea that if I opened a little storefront that allowed people to come in and have any blood test they wanted without a formal physician visit, because I so order it. And that's what I did. I opened my first location up in Kennesaw, Georgia, near Town Center Mall. And now we have 13 locations in Atlanta, about to be 14. And we have a franchise company outside of Georgia that has 130 locations nationwide. Yeah,
that's just amazing. So you're one of the rare physicians that also is thinking like a businessman and finding a need and filling it and being proactive with patients taking some steps on their own.
Well, I was lucky to have a good idea.
That's good. Well, not only that, but you followed it up. If lots of us have ideas, we don't follow
Listen,
it up.
And you know, I suffered with it too, because it's not so easy to
start a
to
business.
Run a business and mm-hmm. I had a lot of worries about how the rest of the medical community would mm-hmm. view it. because in my normal practice, in my normal business, I'm a urologist, mm-hmm. and urologists are dependent upon physician referrals, right. and I was frightened that...
They'd take a little risk.
Yeah.
Yep, but it panned out for you, so that's great. We're going to talk a little bit about the urology practice at the end, but we're going to start by focusing on blood tests. And I'd like to have you briefly tell us a little bit about what you're feeling about what tests are critical. Should we do them annually? Should we do them as needed? Just kind of why is it such an important tool, blood tests, to give us a thought about how we're doing with our health?
Well, just like you said in your opening comments, blood tests give us a snapshot of a number of things going on in our body. And there's a couple blood tests that if you go for a physical examination, almost every physician, every primary care physician has a patient or a new patient, and you have a physical examination, probably on a yearly basis, you get a CBC and a chem profile.
Mm-hmm.
A CBC is a complete blood count, and it's the oldest test known to medical science. And basically what it does, it measures the cells in your blood, and it says things about it. A CBC is most commonly used to diagnose anemia.
Mm-hmm.
If someone has low red blood cells, they're anemic. So the first thing that a CBC does is diagnose anemia. The other thing it does is, in the face of infection, usually we get an elevated white blood count in our blood. So if you have an elevated white blood count, it would be a sign of infection. And that's another thing that a CBC can tell you. There are other parameters that a CBC can tell you in terms of coagulation and...
Like platelets and clotting and how we're doing on our ability to shut down and clot.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the basic of what a CBC does. And mm-hmm. it's a very, very common test.
So there's normals for red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, and we're measuring our own, are we normal or are we not, in our cell production and cell, are they doing what it's supposed to?
Well, that's correct. And, of course, if someone had leukemia, they would have a very, very high white blood count. That's what leukemia is.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone had some other cancer, very often with other cancers, you become anemic and your red blood cell counts go down. So any variance from normal likely would be investigated further.
Mm-hmm. And since blood's systemic, sometimes we don't have the symptoms in the place where there's the problem. It just kind of gives us a starting point, the results of it, of where we should begin looking probably.
I think that's exactly right.
Okay. All right. And then you mentioned chemistry panel would be your second most common test for your annual primary care physician checkup.
Right. So the chem profile or chemistry panel, and it's called by a number of different names, it usually includes anywhere from 12 or 16 or 25 different electrolytes and chemicals in the blood. As a standard practice, you have sodium chloride and albumin and protein and creatinine, which measures kidney function, and BUN, which also measures kidney function. There are a whole variety of things. Usually glucose, which of course is important in screening for diabetes, is part of a chem profile. So chemistry profile really gives us a lot of information. It measures renal function or kidney function. It can measure abnormalities of liver if you have inflammation in your liver. There's liver function tests that come in the chemistry profile. It'll measure the calcium. Albumin, of course, is a protein in your blood. And if you have a terrible diet and you're low in protein, you might see that. Another reason someone might be low in protein is sometimes if someone has a kidney problem, they lose protein in their urine. So their body gets depleted of protein. It sort of leaks out of your kidneys. So chemistry profile is the second portion of a comprehensive or not so comprehensive, actually sort of a baseline view at someone's blood work, mm-hmm. a CBC and chem profile. And that's mm-hmm. that's common and every day, every single solitary physician understands the importance of CBC and chemistry profile.
So since chemistry involves the actual electrolytes, that's something that every cell in our body is going to need – to function. So systemic events of that. But it sounds like the chemistry profile is a good test that physicians use to pick up general kidney issues, general liver issues, and electrolyte imbalances and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct. And electrolytes are an important part of a chemistry profile. And, of course, electrolytes include the salt in your body, the mm-hmm. sodium and chloride. And if you're dehydrated, they'll be abnormal. Potassium is also very important in your blood. And if it gets too high, it can cause cardiac problems.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. Mm-hmm. And you always want to make sure that that's properly monitored. Incidentally, people who take diuretics, and there's lots of people who take diuretics to control their blood pressure. Diuretics, most diuretics are potassium depleting, mm-hmm. so they have to monitor the potassium in their blood periodically.
Mm-hmm. Like what's periodically? I would probably punt that.
I think it depends. When you first go on a diuretic, you're going to want to look at your potassium
a little closer
for the first 6 months, maybe after a month, and then maybe 3 months and 6 months, and after that, maybe every 6 months, and then if it's stable at 6 month intervals, maybe you go to yearly intervals.
Mm-hmm.
Many people who take diuretics also take potassium supplements at the same time.
You know, I have a question about this general test. If you have a patient that's an athlete that's very active, I'm thinking of just like the athletes that have to replenish electrolytes just from how they're working out, or somebody that's really into fitness, would they be monitored any differently? I mean, you'd think they'd be pretty healthy.
Well, I think that's just the point, that usually these athletes you're talking about are pretty young, healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so worried about them,
okay.
unless they're really extreme athletes or, mm-hmm. and or an
professional.
Or
And then they're probably monitored by the team.
Or if they're in extreme weather.
I mean,
even professional athletes in hot weather, really working out hard, they can get in trouble from an electrolyte standpoint.
Now, for CBC and chemistry panel, when I show up to my primary care physician, when would I have the results back? Is this something that would be done in the office? Would it be the next day?
Well, part of the beauty of any lab test is that it's a little bit differently. Normally, let's say you wanted a blood test, whatever mm-hmm. the blood test would be. Let's say you thought your thyroid was off
mm-hmm.
and you wanted a thyroid blood test. You would normally go to your physician and say, hey, here's the reason I want this blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully he would agree with you and then order the blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd send you to a second place
mm-hmm.
and you'd get the
like
blood test.
Like a draw station.
Right? And normally he would say, come back in a week
mm-hmm.
and we'll review the results. So, so you've seen your doctor, you've gone to a lab to get it drawn, and then you've gone back to your doctor. So you basically had three visits
mm-hmm.
to find out about your
mm-hmm.
thyroid.
Which may be fine.
Probably is fine. On the other hand, if you went to any lab test, and part of the reason I thought this was a good business idea was you didn't have to hope that someone would agree with you and order the test.
Or convince them why you're worried.
Or convince them, right? You can just walk in, tell them what you want, and usually within 24 hours, of course, in the early days we used to either fax or mail the results.
Mm-hmm.
Now we send the results electronically. But
mm-hmm.
usually within 24 or 48 hours, you get the results
mm-hmm.
faxed or emailed to you. And that
mm-hmm.
was it. One visit and
mm-hmm.
and you're done.
Mm-hmm. And then if there's an abnormal on there, are they encouraged to follow up with their primary care? Or
absolutely.
Is this off of the, okay.
Part of my concern about ordering a blood test on everyone – everyone or anyone who might mm-hmm. walk in was how do they get follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have requested each and every patient to review any abnormal labs with their private physician.
Okay.
And in fact, they sign something stating that they understand it and they will
mm-hmm.
review their results with their
mm-hmm.
private physician.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of puts a little more of the control and expedites the results actually in the hands of the patient.
I think that's right.
That's very good. Okay, well, let's move on to, I know, one that I hate to have this test because I'm probably in that upper normal or abnormal range, and heart disease is a big problem in the United States, and that is getting into the details of a lipid profile, which includes our cholesterol and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Most people talk about the lipid profile synonymously with cholesterol. And cholesterol is just one aspect of the lipid profile. And a lipid profile measures total cholesterol, and it also measures triglycerides, and it also breaks down your total cholesterol between LDLs, or low-density lipoproteins, and HDL, or high-density lipoproteins. The LDLs are the bad ones. You don't want them. And the HDLs are the good ones, which you do want. So when you get a lipid profile, you get not just a cholesterol value, but you get a breakdown. Probably the most important thing you get is the breakdown between HDL
and
LDL, mm-hmm. or good and bad cholesterol.
So tell us a little bit about how we would interpret that. Like, as a patient, if I'm still like, I have the right, you kind of get into the right kind. If you're going to be bad, you want to be bad in the with the right area.
Well, you know, years ago, if somebody had an elevated cholesterol, mm-hmm. all they could do was change their diet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a little bit younger, my cholesterol was normal, and I used to follow it periodically, and I got into my mid-40s. It would inch up towards 200, and I got a little more worried about it. And then I probably didn't look at it for maybe 2 or 3 years, and then I looked at it, and it was 245, and I was frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started eating like a bird. For about 3 months, I had yogurts and seed. And I worked really hard. Really hard and on my diet, and my cholesterol went from like 245 or 250 down to 215, which in my mind was not very
significant.
Very significant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I talked to one of my colleagues, and I started on a statin. And the statin drugs, like the first one was Zocor, mm-hmm. And then there's Lipitor, and there's mm-hmm. Crestor, and there's a whole bunch of them. The statin drugs have revolutionized the treatment of lipids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some people who jokingly say that the statins should be in our water. And I love the statins. Now, in the old days, we used to say that we wanted total cholesterol under 200 and LDL under 100. In my opinion, I think we've changed because of the statins, and why not? I think we want total cholesterol below 180, and we'd like LDL below 80. I think the lower the better in all of those things. And the problem with all that, and a straight lipid profile is great. I mean, it's a great place to start. But lo and behold, we also have an advanced lipid profile. I had a neighbor who was a very, very good friend of mine who had a heart attack. And he eventually had bypass surgery, and or maybe he had stents, I can't even remember. And he came to me later and he said, "David, I just can't believe my cholesterol's always been low, my LDL was low, and I don't know why I had a heart attack." And he said, "My cardiologist doesn't seem to know." So I said, well, I better not say his name. I said, mm-hmm. "Bob," that Bob's not his name. I said, "Why don't you get an advanced lipid profile?" And this is a true story. So he went and got an advanced lipid profile. And the advanced lipid profile will actually break the LDLs into small segments and large segments. And you like to have the large segments, the small segments can wedge into vessels and block them off. And he had a discrepancy. He had a bad pattern of his LDL. And the only way you could treat that is with niacin. And I said, "Bob, you take these results to your cardiologist and you show them to him and you tell him to go on, you think you probably need to go on niacin,"
mm-hmm.
"and tell him your urologist neighbor told you that." And he went back to his cardiologist, just like I said, and his cardiologist said, "You know, Bob, you're probably right. You should probably be on niacin." And he's been on niacin, and every time I see him now, he just gives me a thumbs up because, interestingly, you know, there's so much in medicine we know and so much we don't know. But my point here is that a lipid profile is great, but an advanced lipid profile might even be better.
Which is probably true, I'm guessing, as we go through some of the rest of these tests, where you can look at it screening, and then you can go deeper or more specific. Same with thyroid. There's things included when we get to the thyroid panel, but then if there's a problem, you can break that down further to find out exactly what intervention is needed.
Oh, you're absolutely right. The specialization in medicine is across the board in anything, in everything. And the nuances of thyroid testing. I mean, I don't really understand thyroid very well. I know a little bit of the basics. After that,
the endocrine guys
see
take
an endocrinologist.
Right.
The reason I'm not an endocrinologist is I just sort of never could put my arms around it. And I'm thankful that there are people who sort of have interest and can do that.
Yeah. While you were speaking, I thought of one question, especially for the consumer listeners that we have out there. And that is, your blood work gets sent out to a LabCorp, a Quest, a hospital lab, or whatever. I'm wondering, are the ranges of what's normal standard, or do they deviate? Like you mentioned, we might want to consider over time changing the cholesterol normal parameters based on what we now can achieve or do. Are they standard? Like, would Quest normal be the same as LabCorp and the same as Northside Hospital, or are they different?
I think normal values are just sort of defined.
Guidelines?
We presume that while the testing is done differently at different labs, and for certain types of testing they use different assay techniques, so they may get slightly different results, but the normal ranges are basically about normal. Although it is true, some labs have different normals for different tests. Mm-hmm. A perfect example of that is testosterone testing. Mm-hmm. Your testosterone result needs to be looked at carefully as to what your lab said the normals were. And every test you get, every time you get a blood test, it shows you your value.
And then it
tells you the normal range. Mm-hmm. But some labs have different normal ranges. Mm-hmm. Your point's right. But humans are largely thought to have one certain real value.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that clarification. Okay. Let's move on to PSA. So for all the men out there.
So PSA is a substance that is produced only by the prostate gland.
Mm-hmm.
And its measurement is used only to detect prostate cancer.
As a screening test.
As a screening
not
test.
A diagnostic test.
Well, I mean, it's
not a biopsy, but it's going to tell you got a problem.
It's used as a screening test.
Mm-hmm.
PSA values normally have been considered to be normal values 0 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And after PSAs were out for a decade or so, we started to realize that these values go up as men age. And the American Urologic Association then said, well, you know, 0 to 4 is fine. But actually, if you're over 60, we think the range 4 to 5 is acceptable for men over 60. So they liberalized the range for men over 60. And PSA is a tough, is a difficult screening tool. While it's very, very valuable, I think virtually every urologist would tell you it's very valuable. Sometimes a man can have an elevated PSA and not have prostate cancer. And some of the criticism that's been in the news lately about PSA has been that abnormal PSAs have driven men and their urologists into biopsies that weren't needed.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's been a rather large controversy over the last couple of years about the effectiveness of PSA screening, to the point where some knowledgeable people have suggested that PSA screening should be stopped altogether. I think when that happened, most every urologist, myself included, was astounded that someone would make a comment like that, because we all have scores of men in our practice who've been diagnosed with prostate cancer from PSAs.
Mm-hmm. That would have been missed.
That we presume would have mm-hmm. been missed. It's a very complicated discussion as to why they thought what they thought. Although, quite honestly, the American Urologic Association has recently adjusted their belief on who should be screened, and their focus is more for men over age 50 and under age 70. Between 55 and 70 is the group that they're really focused on screening.
Is that with risk factors, or it doesn't matter? Or be younger if they had
younger,
risk factors?
Younger if they have any risk factors, mm-hmm. surely. Although I'm not sure you're going to find that many urologists who are really willing to take a 50-year-old guy and say, no, I don't think we need to do a PSA. Mm-hmm. I think the general scheme of PSA screening has been 40 years old if you're African-American, 45 years old if you're white. And then we sort of stopped when a guy seemed too old or too sick that it wouldn't matter. The question is, if you have a very healthy 83-year-old, do you stop doing a PSA on him because of his age? I mean, he might live to be 103, and he might.
Especially these days and time, is it?
Prostate cancer. So it's a tough discussion as to who mm-hmm. should have a PSA screening. But mm-hmm. but surely I would think men in the range of 50 to 70.
In an annual check.
Should have an annual
check. Okay, very good. Now let's move on to the thyroid panels.
Well, I'm not so good on thyroid.
I'm not either, but we'll wing it here.
We'll wing it a little bit. But I have a good friend up in Michigan who's a thyroid surgeon, and he told me, David, all you need really for the vast majority of thyroid screening is a thyroid-stimulating hormone. And thyroid-stimulating hormone, basically, if you have an increased thyroid, your thyroid-stimulating hormone would be suppressed and low. And if you have a low thyroid, your thyroid-stimulating hormone would be trying to stimulate.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the most important thing, the single most important test in thyroid screening is a thyroid-stimulating hormone.
Mm-hmm. If we went on to see what the problem was, like if we identified that we were hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, are there more tests that would most likely be done? Like, is it looked at as you're normal, you're above, you're below, or probably go to an endocrinologist again?
No doubt if you had any abnormal thyroid testing,
you would see either
your primary care physician or your internal medicine specialist, or you can go to an endocrinologist.
Very good. So we've kind of gone through what would be included in like an annual basis for blood tests. Normal screening blood test that would be available to most people. Is that right?
I think that's true.
Okay.
I mean, every single patient has a different need
mm-hmm.
and often a different complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know really what they mm-hmm. what they want or mm-hmm. need. But the tests we just reviewed are pretty normal, mm-hmm. basic preventive mm-hmm. kind of care screening mm-hmm. tests.
I was curious if there's some kind of request, since in your centers, patients can just present and ask for what they want, that's really not included in this. Like, is there one that the doctors routinely at your checkup say, okay, we'll do the CBC, we'll do your cholesterol, your thyroid, blah, 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 blah. But there's one that is commonly neglected that patients ask for a lot.
I can't think of one test. Well, they come in for a lot of HIV testing because mm-hmm. they're worried about it. So mm-hmm. they come in. Perhaps they were
had some exposure.
Yes, perhaps they had some exposure and they're worried. Thank you. And so we see a fairly large number of people coming in for STD testing,
mm-hmm.
and we see a lot of pre-employment people mm-hmm. come in for a urine drug screen.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the test before the test.
Right.
But those are the main things we do.
The patients
that
request.
Those are the main things we do.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I know before we went on the air, we were actually watching CNN while we were waiting, and President Obama was on trying to sell the Obamacare to the young people. And before we got on, we were talking about the U.S. healthcare system and Obamacare, and it's kind of a big confusing mess right now. But in terms of your specialty in the lab test and Obamacare, what do you kind of have as far as thoughts in that topic?
I'm as confused as everyone. I really don't know how things are going to play out. I think certainly in this by spring we should have an idea of what Obamacare means or doesn't mean. It's so difficult for me to comment on it. I think, you know, my fear about it all, and it gets to be political and it gets to be economic, and demographically, I just don't know how you can take 35 or 40 million people and put them into the medical care system and not raise prices. I mean, somehow, somewhere, if there's added care being delivered, it's got to come from somewhere. And demographically, you know, I worry about the whole demographics of our society now in terms of health care, where a lot of baby boomers like myself, many of the physicians now are baby boomers, some of them coming right upon retirement, and mm-hmm. some of them, my wife's a physician who recently retired, and I'm worried that the number of physicians is going to decrease because mm-hmm. a lot of the baby boomers are going away mm-hmm. just at a time when we have this influx of people into the system mm-hmm. and the baby boomers themselves are requiring more care. Mm-hmm. So demographically in our country, we're really requiring a lot more care because we have an aging population, mm-hmm. number one, and we have this new influx of people
and who are
requiring.
And a shrinking labor pool. Well, on top of
and
it,
and a shrinking labor pool. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. So somewhere something has to give. And our country has never been able to agree to ration, not rationing health care. Mm-hmm. And I think we will have, as a country, turmoil forever until we agree on some form of rationing. And, you know, I don't know if there should be four tiers where everybody gets
a
basic plan and then you pay a little more and you get a basic plus one or and then a basic plus two and a basic plus three. The problem is if someone has the basic plan and they need a liver transplant, we have never, ever as a country, and I think this is admirable mm-hmm. in a way, we've never, ever been able to look at them and say, no, sorry, you didn't pay for that. That was your choice, and a liver transplant's not available to mm-hmm. you. And therefore, we're saying everybody gets the gold plan. Mm-hmm. If everybody's on the gold plan, I don't know how we can afford it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this fits together with the Affordable Care Act mm-hmm. and with our country's demographics and what our mindset is as a country and where we need to go with healthcare.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's apparent to me that as we go on and we are all untangling and learning, seems like daily in the news, one thing that I see in healthcare is no matter whether it's the physicians, the policy, the politics, the cost, mm-hmm. patients are going to have to be more responsible for decisions they make about their healthcare and paying for more and more mm-hmm. themselves. So we'll see how it all plays out together, I guess. And it's a moving target for sure. Well, one thing, we're almost about to the end of our time, but I know that when we have listeners out there, although we've talked about normals and abnormals and get your screening and get your blood test, it's an easy, simple test to have, pretty cost effective to have for most of these. Are there any success stories or things that just you remember making a difference for patients that stand out in your mind?
Oh, there's no question about it. I've had people who told me they went to my lab, got a test, found something out, and are so thankful that it was easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was so thankful. You know, I do have – how much time do we have
left? We have a few minutes.
Okay. So I'd like to talk a little bit, if we can, about preventive care because mm-hmm. preventive care – I mean, everybody wants to talk about preventive care, and preventive care is great. Who could disagree with watching out for things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is people don't do it. All they do is talk about what a great idea preventive care is, and I mean to some extent they do it. Thank goodness we have immunization programs mm-hmm. and things like that. But by and large, the vast majority of our population really does not take responsibility for their health. You know, I sort of have something I call the 70% rule, and I think that we as people, I mean, we're in this world, And there's bullets flying around at us all the time, health bullets, things that are going to get us health-wise. And our job is to avoid those bullets. And I think we can avoid 70% of them. It's what I call the 70% rule. 30% of the time, we're going to get some crazy brain tumor or some bizarre blood disease or something. I don't think we can really do things about 30%, but I think we can do stuff 70% of the time. And those things are know your blood pressure, know your glucose, know if you're diabetic, know your cholesterol and your lipid profile, and then have your colonoscopies, know what your PSA is, wear a seatbelt, don't smoke. I think there's 70% of the time we can avoid bullets. You know, no, nobody
doing
can
some
do,
common sense by, things by, in life, doing, simple lifestyle.
Doing the important things. Again, hypertension, diabetes, cholesterol, colon cancer, prostate cancer, seat belts, no smoking. I think
so you've actually just listed some of the major causes of death. So heart disease screening, diabetic complications, motor vehicle accidents, you know, things like that. Those are things that are, you know, can look and do something.
And too often my colleagues, other physicians, they don't really grab the patients and tell them, focus on this guy. I see so many people who start on a blood pressure medicine and then say, well, you know, I feel pretty good, so I stopped it and I'm still pretty good. They're walking around with high blood pressure. High blood pressure slowly, slowly creates atherosclerotic changes and ultimately heart attacks and strokes. And their doctor needed somewhere along the line to explain to them the importance, the real importance, not just put them on the medicine and say you have high blood pressure and let's get it down. And that communication sometimes is missing and I think important.
Driving home their risk while they're in front of you because you may not get them back.
No, right.
Yeah, may not get them back. Well, listen, we're to the end of our time today. I want to thank you for coming and cluing us in on some very easy, accessible blood tests that we can have and get those baseline results. And I wanted to leave by letting patients know both on the urology side and at any lab test a little bit about what you do and how they can find you and your websites and your phone number.
Sure, sure. That's very kind. If anybody wants a blood test, we are located metro-wide in Atlanta. And the best thing to do is just go to anytest.com, A-N-Y-T-E-S-T.com. And I am a urologist on Windy Hill in Marietta, and I'm easy to find.
And your website, I think, for your urology practice is www.urologyatl.com.
That's correct.
Very good. And so just call, get in. You know, it's easy to get in, easy access on the AnyLab test, and get your baseline screening done and know where you're at. So thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to having you back again.
Great. Thank you, Tanya.
All right. Have a good afternoon, everyone. Please also check our sponsor site, www.healthgate.com, to see if any of these things are up there for you that can help you. And have a great afternoon. Thanks for listening.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.